Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
We talked a little bit yesterday about the Associated Press Sports Editors Award. Alabama Adriana brought it up late in the show. We talked about it. But essentially, if you are in sports writing in this country, and those are the awards that the sports writers pay attention to. It's the Oscars. It's the Emmys. It's a little bit inside baseball, but it's true. And I pay attention to it for a couple of reasons. One, I like to read who my peers think are the best at their craft. Two, I get exposed to a lot of things that I might not otherwise read from other markets, other papers. And I also like to kind of root for the people that have ties to the state of Oregon, or maybe people that I grew up watching grow up. And Kenny Jacoby is one of those. He's an investigative reporter at USA Today. He previously was at the University of Oregon. He did some tremendous work as a student journalist there. But I was delighted when the investigative reporters category came up. And by the way, an investigative in the Associated Press Sports Editors Awards, there is no circulation distinction. It's just the best 10. It's tough to get in there for that reason, because you have teams that like the Washington Post and New York Times and Yahoo who will dedicate resource upon resource to chasing down stories. So two things struck me as the investigative category results came up this week. One, I saw Kenny Jacoby's name pop up, and I was like, good on Kenny Jacoby, deserves it. He's been all over a lot of important stuff. And two, Kenny Jacoby's in there by himself, which by itself is an accomplishment. I sent him a message and I sent him a note on it because I'm incredibly proud of the kid, and he's joining us now. Kenny Jacoby, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks, John.
The work you got recognized for, Predator Pipeline, first and foremost, important stuff. You're really focused on campuses, campus safety, sex assaults. Why is this important to you?
Yeah, I think time and time again, we've seen universities handle these cases incorrectly when it comes to a big-time athlete who has the potential to make a lot of money for their school, create positive publicity. More often than not, I think when situations like that do come up, something goes awry where the university or even the local police act in a way that they wouldn't have if this had just been a regular student or even a non-student. And I think ultimately what it comes to is that oftentimes athletes are prioritized over non-athletes, and particularly women on campus as well.
This was important to you as a student journalist too at Oregon, and I know that it probably didn't make you popular with administrators at Oregon or maybe even some fellow students, because you were digging and poking around things that made people uncomfortable. How did you handle that at the time as a student?
Yeah, so I first started reporting in this vein when I was a senior, the sports editor at the Daily Emerald student newspaper. And until that point, I had just been doing beat reporting stuff, covering first, you know, the volleyball team, the baseball team, worked my way up to the football team. But pretty much as soon as I started taking on some of these tougher stories and leads that we came up with, I knew that my access, at least personally, was going to be affected. And that potentially the student newspaper's access would be affected as well. So for me, it was just more of a decision of, you know, am I going to be an access journalist or am I going to be a serious investigator? And I chose the latter.
I think that's interesting. And I think that we all, as journalists, have to make those distinctions. I know I did it when I was covering Jerry Tarkanian, because it was tough to cover him. He could turn the crowd against you, and there were a lot of people who said, oh, what's the harm? Look the other way. But there was stuff that was going on that I didn't like, and I ultimately, like you, Kenny, decided I had to sleep well, right? I just said, I need to be the journalist that I want to be. You have continued after college reporting on sex assault, campus safety, players, how athletes are treated. When you start, because this entry you have in investigative is all along that theme, when you start, do you say this is an investigative project, or at what point did it become a project?
Good question. So the impetus for this investigation, Predator Pipeline, was a case that I had been following at Oregon since I was a student news reporter there. It was the case of Tristan Wallace, who I much later, at the time I was at the university, all I knew was that he was under investigation for something, possibly a sexual assault. It wasn't until early last year that I got my hands on a 600-page case file detailing at length how he had been accused of raping two female students, had been expelled from the University of Oregon twice after he was found responsible, and still somehow managed to transfer to another Division I school where he now plays. And so that in itself, I felt, would have been worth a story. But I also knew that this wasn't unique, that there were other instances of this happening as well. And so it was with that in mind that I decided to take a larger, bigger picture look at this issue of transferring between institutions after having a finding of responsibility for sexual misconduct.
Kenny Jacoby is with us. He's with USA Today sports team, or the USA Today network. He's an investigative reporter and now an award-winning investigative reporter. What does it mean to you when you see your name alongside the New York Times, the LA Times, the teams from Yahoo Sports on this list? It jumped right off the page to me.
Yeah, no, it means a lot to me. It's great company. There's some terrific reporting in there, including things like, the sign stealing case in Major League Baseball and USA Gymnastics stuff. And so I'm seeing my name up there with, Pat Ford and Ken Rosenthal and these terrific, seasoned reporters. And, for me, it's just really special. Especially because this is an issue that I've reported on that a lot of people don't like to talk about.
Yep.
And so I'm glad to see it got the recognition from people who decided that this is a worthwhile issue that's worth a further discussion.
One of the parts to your series dealt with Brenda Tracy and then the Brenda Tracy rule. People in our state are familiar with her, the gang rape at Oregon State football players. Just a terrible story that she has turned into an opportunity to change laws and to change culture. At what point does Brenda Tracy enter your stratosphere? Because it feels like, she is such a valuable lobbyist to this cause.
Yeah. So when I first heard about Brenda Tracy is when I read your article from November 2014. I was a student at the University of Oregon at the time, and it was not that long after, actually it was frankly in the middle of the Oregon basketball sexual assault scandal. At that point, I was really learning a lot about this issue. I had been sort of a blind, fan, especially of Oregon, until a lot of this stuff spilled out publicly, and I started to really get a better sense of how universities and police to handle this issue on the whole. So I ended up reaching out to Brenda Tracy for the first time when I was reporting on a different case at Oregon a couple years later involving Cavell Bigbee Williams on the basketball team. She was a source of mine at that time. And when I started doing this investigation again, it made sense to reach out to her and learn about the way that she was promoting reform across college sports.
Do you see change? Do you see that reform?
We do, actually. So one thing that our investigation did was it identified seven or eight different universities that claimed to us that they didn't know that athletes on their own rosters had transferred in after being found responsible for sexual assault at another school. And they were purporting to us that we were the first to notify them of this when we found out of it. And that seemed like a big problem. After we published our investigation, we circled back with those same schools and asked what they were going to be doing differently moving forward to prevent a situation like that. One of those schools was Slippery Rock University, and they told us just right off the bat that they were going to adopt the Tracy Rule, which meant that they would be doing strict background checks for athletes in the future, and that they would be banning those who had been found responsible for sexual assault in the past. So that's a good example on an institutional level, but you also now have the NCAA taking action, especially after we heard from U.S. Congressman Donna Shalala. She said that this very issue of transferability and athletes being, you know, not held accountable by the NCAA for sexual assault, that was going to be the subject of a recent federal bill that she filed. And it was right after we sort of wrote about that, that Congress might be stepping in, that the NCAA said, okay, we're going to, you know, update our own policies. We're going to expand them to have a more comprehensive sexual assault policy. And we don't know exactly what those changes are going to be yet, but we're told that the changes are imminent.
Kenny Jacoby, congratulations to you on winning an APSC award. It's a big deal, especially in that category, and keep doing what you do.
Thank you, John. I really appreciate it.
All right, there he is. Kenny Jacoby, USA Today. Good stuff. Changing gears in the next segment. Bobby Hurley still ahead, top of the hour. Harold Reynolds later in the show. I'm having a hard time with Burger King's latest advertising campaign, and maybe the mission of this advertising campaign is simply to get us thinking and talking about Burger King and the Whopper. But I think Burger King needs to rethink its advertising. Its newest ad campaign features a moldy Whopper. It showcases that, hey, we don't have any preservatives. Look, mold grows here. That's not appetizing to me. Yes, the fact that a burger has fewer preservatives, that's appealing. But I can't overcome the emotional response I have when I see all that mold and fuzz on a burger. It doesn't make me want to have your damn Whopper.
Yeah, I think they're trying to look, I give as little credit to advertising execs as possible. Like, do you remember the Volkswagen commercial that just said lemon from when we were kids?
Yeah.
They're just trying to do the same thing here, aren't they?
I don't know. I think it's a misfire.
It's actually furry.
Yeah.
Like, I never want to eat another one.
Yeah.
It's really doing the complete opposite for me.
Makes you want to have nothing. And I get it. They're like, hey, you have no preservatives, but I ain't touching that. I'll take some preservatives. Thank you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It looks like there's a caterpillar hanging out the side of it.
The Quiznos had a little rodent that it used to promote its sandwiches like years ago. It looked like a rodent that had been run over. Had one eye that was bigger than all the other eyes, and it was disgusting.
See, doesn't someone in the room, when they're talking about this, just have to stand up and go, hey, yep, wait a second.
Yep. But the fact that Adriana said it, you said it makes you never want to have a Whopper ever again.
And I liked Whoppers.
Yeah.
A lot.
That's a misfire. That is a multi-million dollar misfire by Burger King on that ad campaign. And I've always felt like that, too. It, just because you are working in advertising doesn't mean you have great ideas. It doesn't. I don't know if they did market research on that. I don't know if they, I've found for years, like, I think some of the smartest leaders are leaders who go, I don't have all the answers. I need input here. Because you get this groupthink going on in organizations that have a dictator, where everyone's afraid to speak up and you can't offer an opinion, and all of a sudden Everybody's just mimicking the ideas of one person, and if that person has bad ideas, look out. Blazers had that years ago. Steve Patterson is the team president. Groupthink. It infected the organization. It started when he walked through the doors on his first day. People may remember this. He fired, like, in his first week, like, 88 people, 90 people. And Bob Whitsitt, the former general manager and team president, did not want to lay anybody off. He said, I'm going out the door. Steve Patterson came in, had to be the axe man right away. It was a bad setup. If you are, and this was a misfire by Paul Allen, if you're hiring a new team president and a GM, and you know you're going to lay off 80 or 90 people, you need to do that before the new president comes in. Don't have him come in and be the face of you. Like, that's the first action he had. Because what it created, A, it created a lot of hostility, bad feelings, anxiety among the staff, everybody looking over their shoulder. But can you imagine a meeting in which he's trying to be collaborative a month after firing 90 people and he's asking for suggestions and input? Everyone's like, great idea, great idea. Whatever you think is a great idea. Because nobody wanted to lose their job. It was bad. It's a bad move. Bad, bad, bad. And this advertising thing is bad. If you own Burger King stock, get out of Dodge. It's a bad marker. It really is a symptom. I always look for symptoms of good companies and bad companies. And people will look at, you know, what are the analysts saying? What is their revenue? I'm more anecdotal. I walk by the Apple store. I look into the Apple store. I see a whole bunch of employees standing around and no customers, and this happens on a consistent basis, I start to worry about Apple. But guess what? I walk by the Apple store, it's jammed. Everybody's walking in and out of there with product. And people are like, oh, Apple's in trouble in China. I'm like, yeah, they'll figure it out. It's a good company. They'll figure it out. This is a bad marker for Burger King. I'm not into shorting stocks, but I'll be watching Burger King stock just to see what it does in the next quarter, because I'm curious if Adriana, who likes a Whopper, would you say that a Whopper would be among your burger choices if you had to eat a burger before this day?
I would say it's in like the top 5 or 6, maybe. Okay.
Now where is it after seeing that furry little creature?
I already don't eat Burger King that often anymore, but I probably will not.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
It's bad advertising, bad marketing. And sports teams come up, a lot of sports teams come up with promotions and ideas that are dumb. But sometimes we go, okay, they're just trying to be outlandish. You can't mess with your primary product. Like, Burger King messed with the Whopper. Like, what else? Like, the chicken sandwich? There's nothing else to go to here.
They already messed with it, which I don't think it's a bad thing, but they already did change it with the Impossible Burger Whopper, which I heard was good. I haven't had it.
I mean, I'm not going anywhere near Burger King right now.
Yeah.
I don't want any of that mold on my stuff. I'm not eating mold. There's nothing worse. Okay, I'll give you an example of this. My nephew had to do a science project. Okay, let me back up. I was in a Tommy Bahama store on vacation like 5 years ago. And I saw something, like, they have a lot of cool little things in there. I think I'm too young to be wearing Tommy Bahama clothes. That's just me. But I walked through the store and they have like really cool like accessory stuff. They had like drinkware that is made to use outside. And we have kids, but the drinkware was plastic. So it's these little, cool plastic cups that are kind of heavy at the bottom, almost like a glass that you would have a drink in, but it's not glass, it's plastic. And I thought, this would be great to have. I could use these outside, then I don't have to worry about them breaking. They were expensive, but I bought them. Set of 4. 2 orange ones, 2 blue ones. My nephew's visiting. He has to do a science project. He wants to do a project on soft drinks that make your teeth decay. What is the bigger offender? Coke, Pepsi? Is it Gatorade? Is it 7-Up? Is it apple juice? What makes the enamel on your teeth rot away quicker? So he went to a dental office and got like 4 human teeth. I like to me that grosses me out by thinking about it. It's walking around with four teeth that don't belong to him. He brings them to our house, and he's got to do the experiment. I'm not home, so what happens? Those four cups that I bought at Tommy Bahama that overpaid for get used as the science experiment cups because they look like they're plastic. This should work. They're little cups. And he puts it out. I come home, and there are four human teeth and four different beverages poured into cups. And he's waiting to study which one is going to eat the enamel of the human teeth quicker. To this day, these cups have been disinfected. These cups have been washed over and again in the dishwasher. I've washed them by hand, trying to shake that image of the human teeth being in those cups. I can't do it. I can't drink out of those cups. It's ruined it for me. I'm almost at the point where I'm ready to throw them away, but I can't because I paid like $20 for four little plastic cups. And I just want to buy four new cups at this point. That kind of association is what Burger King is messing with here. I can't see those four cups without thinking about whose teeth were in those cups. Where did they come from? Were they teeth they wanted to lose? Were they baby teeth? Or were they from somebody whose teeth were rotted? You know what I mean? Am I wrong? Is that a weird thing to think about?
No, that makes perfect sense. I'm really curious, by the way, which soda did it first?
Gatorade.
Really?
Gatorade was the worst for your enamel. Worse than a carbonated beverage.
That's shocking. I mean, I guess there's a lot of citric acid in there.
And the sugar, higher sugar content. So,
wow.
Yeah, a lot of sugar in Gatorade. So Gatorade was the worst, yeah. But never mind the cups, Peter. That's the point of the story was the cups.
Oh, no, the cups are a goner.
Like, I can't even use them. Like, if you guys came over, I can't even with a straight face pull them out and be like, here, have a drink. You guys use them. And they've been washed. Like, should I just get that out of my head? They've been washed. Like, they've probably been washed 100 times since then.
I mean, this is also kind of like the time I brought your lunch in the dog bowl.
Exactly. Can't do it. Can't shake the image of the dog eating out of that bowl. I don't care if you have, you know, put that in a, you know, sterilization machine. Autoclave that.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.